Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 56, section 6, which is old single column, page 641. All right, so let's remind ourselves again of the dance that they've been doing with the titles of these sections we've been going through. Recall that with section 2, we had intellectual unity. And then with sections 3 and 4, there was a unification that they were speaking to. First, spiritual unification, then personality unification. All right, and then we saw with section 5, it was back to unity again, only that time deity unity. And you can see coming up with this next one, we've got unification again. Right, we've been bouncing back and forth, right, and we've been trying to understand why they've been doing, why they're doing that. The two that immediately catch your eye, okay, there's these two that seem to have some sort of an innateness to them, rather than having that working on the process of unifying, that intellectual unity and deity unity. And this most straightforward way to appreciate the immediacy of the relationship between those two, that they would have that same word associated with them, is deity is innately minded. So deity is a fact, a very transcendent substance, and it's innately minded, and in many ways you can think of mind as being an expression of that innate essence that's in deity. And the fundamental quality of deity is unity. And so hence it's also intellectual unity. See, in correlation with that fact of deity unity. But no matter what unity you're talking about, and as we saw them emphasizing, in section 5 that we just did last session, unity is divisible. If you're talking about indivisibility, as you see right at the very beginning of section 5, right, indivisibility is oneness. Unity is divisible. They're obviously speaking to that fact that no matter how high the unity, unity is divisible, if they're going to be talking about unification of evolutionary deity, right? So obviously they're speaking of the unity of deity being something that in some way has been divided. And you're now thinking about it being brought together, being unified. Okay. So, a simple way to think about if the threefold actuality chart, if we think philosophically about the threefold actuality, you have, in a simple way, matter, mind, spirit, sort of a literal energy way, but philosophically, you have individuality, associativity, unity, like we say all the time. So using that word unity in a, in a relatively lesser sense, a very specific sense, not a very high generalized sense, but a simple way to think about the unity that is related to spirit. You have a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity that establishes the diversity of unity of the seven super universes. See, that's an example of unity being divisible, right? It's, you know, a singular unity, spirit unity that's in the central universe has been divided, you know, into a sevenfold downstepped expression. So unity is divisible. But if you want to speak to indivisibility, that's oneness. Okay, so let's get into this next section. Everyone kind of take a deep breath and strap in, because it has a fairly high degree of complexity that I'm going to have to try to slowly step you through. There's no way that we can, that I can illuminate it in a very full sense, where you can begin to really feel the depth of what they're talking about, because they're invoking a lot of the complexity of what you discover when you unpack all the details of total deity. Like I've said several times as we've been going through this, I mean, that's the point of having the total deity seminar, is to focus in, for those who are ready to take on that challenge of beginning to methodically step through and get all of the details of deity laid out, so you can appreciate what they're alluding to between the lines all the time throughout the book. And this, you'll see in these first two paragraphs especially, they're invoking some of those details. There's a lot of complexity to issues with deity. When you say the fundamental quality of deity is unity, your first thought is, oh, this is going to be really simple. And it's just unity, right? And what else needs to be said? What else is there? No, unity is divisible. Okay? And it's extremely complex. Okay? You put something that's divisible in the presence of an influence of an infinite potential to divide, to individuate, like the Isle of Paradise, and you're going to have a lot of individuality, a lot of divisions, a lot of complexity. The Isle of Paradise is the absolute of individuality, and it can serve as that template for individuality ad infinitum, literally. Okay.
Well, what comes to mind is, if unity is infinitely divisible, how is it different than individuality?
Right. Yeah. See, it's all very complex, right? But see, that reminds you to not think. You can't think, you know, in simplistic terms. It's just like, you know, on the threefold actuality, things, meanings, values. Okay, yes, but a value is a thing in a more generalized sense of the word thing. All right, so, it's all of this is hierarchical. There's individuality, and then there's individuality, if you will. But just, you know, recognize that no matter if you're talking about something that, like matter, that is a very immediate, direct expression of individuality, or the individuation of spirit substance, you know, or spirit, you know, a spirit presence being specified and individuated, all individuation is relative to the absolute of individuality. Right? So it's not just the absolute of matter. See, that's kind of the scientific fact of the aisle. Right. But the philosophic fact of the aisle is it's the absolute of individuality. And it doesn't matter what's being individuated, deity or whatnot. It's all done relative to the absolute of individuality. Now, how can the Father fragment, you know, that particular facet of deity that he fragments to make Father fragments? You know, how can that unity of that deity be individuated to make a thought adjuster? If the aisle didn't exist, he couldn't do that. All individuation is relative to the absolute of individuality. He doesn't somehow have that within himself. He has to do that relative to the aisle in order for a thought adjuster to be individuated. See, to get into that full philosophic recognition of what's going on, and not just saying, well, who cares? You know, you say he's a magical being, he can do whatever he wants. It's like, no, everything has to be logical, right? So anyway, it's that kind of, you know, quest for clarity and full logical specification of everything, you know, that leads you down the path of unpacking total deity and figuring out what's between the lines all over the place in the Revelation. Okay, but so let's just keep all of that complexity in mind. We're not going to, you know, we can't even remotely begin to get into all of the precision of it. But I'll just kind of give you the, you know, a basic feel for what they're referring to, and I'll show you a couple places in the book where they're also trying to suggest, right, what I'm going to explain. Okay.
Unification of evolutionary deity. When the three eternal persons of deity function as undivided deity in the Paradise Trinity, they achieve perfect unity. Likewise, when they create, either associatively or severally, their paradise progeny exhibit the characteristic unity of deity.
No, of divinity.
Of divinity. And this divinity of purpose, manifested by the supreme creators and rulers of the time-space domains, eventuates in the unifying power potential of the sovereignty of experiential supremacy, which, in the presence of the impersonal energy unity of the universe, constitutes a reality tension that can be resolved only through adequate unification with the experiential personality realities of experiential deity.
See how straightforward that is?
Yeah. Keep reading.
Okay. What's there to say? It's obvious. Okay. But the really cool thing is you actually can finally get enough of a framework in your mind that you can, you know, you can appreciate everything that they're referring to there. So let's just step through it a little bit. So you notice, just like how the previous section started out, you know, if you glance over to that first paragraph of the previous section, remember they were getting you to think about the Paradise Trinity and, you know, in a top-down mode, where we have, you know, you're picturing a fact of deity, and you are recognizing that it's in part divisible, and you can downstep those three divisible phases of it, if you will, or aspects of it, and you have the three, you know, the deity for the three persons, but then there's the undivided deity, the indivisible deity that's left behind the Paradise Trinity. And so they're invoking that again. They start out kind of in that same space of, there's, because that's divided deity in each of those three persons, right? If they're going to, you know, they can't, none of them by themselves can function in that that higher undivided mode. The Paradise, when that needs to be manifested, only the Paradise Trinity, right, as a fourth individuality, can function in that undivided mode. And you see they're heading towards invoking the Supreme Creators. They go, oh yeah, that's, they mentioned them in the previous section too. Remember, they were, like I said, the previous section is sort of setting the stage for this section. So again, let's remind ourselves of the Supreme Creators. Without specifying, because they did that in the previous section. You've got the Creator Sons and the Creative Mother Spirits. You know, those are among the Supreme Creators. You also have the 21 Ancients of Days, you know, are Supreme Creators, and the 7 Master Spirits. Right, so all of them together, those are the Supreme Creators. And what they're getting at, what they're wanting to get at here is, why are they called Supreme Creators? They're obviously creators, but why are they called Supreme Creators? Okay, and so they're giving you all the different modes of how those supreme creators come into existence. The Ancients of Days are direct offspring of just the Paradise Trinity. You know, none of the three persons are involved. Right, so that's the first part. So they function as undivided deity, right, in the Paradise Trinity. Paradise Trinity gives rise to the Ancients of Days. And then the three... Oh, yeah?
Personality. They have personality.
Right, the Father bestows personality upon them.
Okay.
It's a separate fact.
But their self is
a... But their deity nature comes purely from the Paradise Trinity. And then, so that's, you know, that's the Ancients of Days, and then, you know, what about the Creator Sons, Creator Mother Spirits, and the Seven Master Spirits? So you've got the two different things, associatively or severally, and if that adverb severally kind of catches you off guard, several, the literal meaning of the word several is separate. Right, to say, so to say severally, you know, means separately, individually. Right, you got the three persons. You know, they, so if they function separately or individually, and they do that in several different ways, right? You can bottle that all up and say that they're doing that severally. Okay. So, for instance, the infinite spirit, just unto itself, gives rise to a creative spirit. The universal Father and the eternal Son give rise to a creator Son. So that's associatively. With the master spirits, you've got three where it's individually. Three that are associatively as pairs, and one that's all three in association, right, to give rise to the seventh master spirit. So, see, no matter what, And you can see there's two different modes, you know, the way when the third person is making the third master spirit, that's functioning in a mode that's different when that third person makes a creative spirit. Right? See, so you know it's functioning individually in both cases, but in a different mode. See, so you can see why they said severally, right? Just to encompass all the different modes that those supreme creators are coming into existence. Okay, so just setting it up, you can see how precise they're being, and that's appropriate. There, in order to get into the details of this, you've got to be really focusing in, thinking very precisely, applying all the stuff that you know that's between the lines of the revelation. Okay. So they're getting you in that mode. You're thinking very precisely. So you've got all of this progeny, and you know even beyond the supreme creators, like let's say you know making a magisterial son. They all exhibit the characteristic unity of divinity, as they say there. Now, in the case of the supreme creators, that divinity, that deity likeness, is immediate because they literally are deity, you know, and then personalized, right? So their deity likeness is, yeah, just immediate. It's not something that you, you know, that is, you know, a secondary quality, if you will. It's a primary fact. It's just the fact that because they're deity, they obviously have deity likeness. They have divinity. Whereas a magisterial son is not deity. That's a person, but that's not personalized deity. A magisterial son is not God. Okay. Very, very divine, very high being, yes, but they don't have a body, if you will, you know, made out of deity substance. Yeah. When I say that, that's pushing things a little bit, but just, you know, for simplicity's sake. You know, they don't literally embody deity, so they're not God when that nature is personalized. You know, or like we were just saying, deity is innately minded, you know, to have a deity mindal self, yeah, as opposed to just some kind of a mindal self, like, for instance, my mindal self. Okay. So then they get in, you know, and this divinity of purpose. Remember how we brought up that perfection of purpose that was in two sections back. You know, they invoke that. So, you know, they keep sort of playing off of this. You know, just like you can have perfection of purpose. You know, that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. That consecration being finished as a prerequisite to get into Havona. They are brought into existence with that. You know, they don't have to go through some process to get to that perfection of purpose. Then it starts to get into what they want to get to. So let's just step through that. So, and this divinity of purpose manifested by the supreme creators and rulers. You know, they're just reminding you, they're not just sort of creators and then they go off and stand in a corner somewhere. They're ongoing rulers, right? Supreme creators and rulers of the time-space domains eventuates in the unifying power potential of the sovereignty of experiential supremacy. Okay. Very fancy way of saying what? Right? The sovereignty of experiential supremacy is referring to the Supreme Being, right? Standing above and encompassing the total finite as the sovereign of the total finite. But then there's saying relative to that fact, the unifying power potential of that fact. Okay, power. And, you know, I point out all the time when it's one thing to talk about the power personality synthesis as an absonite being that is the supreme being, but if you're thinking down in the finite, we obviously are unifying. Okay, we're speaking of a temporal sequence here. If we go down into the finite, there's two aspects. You know, the supreme being, if you will, splits into two facts down in the finite. Okay, the power pattern aspect that they're obviously referring to here, the unifying power potential, right, that's the almighty supreme. Let's speak of it in those terms initially, as an individuality, that power pattern aspect is the almighty supreme. It's like, well, why are they saying power potential? Right? Because if you're thinking in a time mode, that almighty supreme is not the end. It's the potential for having the actuality of the supreme being eventually. Right? Now, in a simple way, you can think of the almighty supreme as the future body of the supreme being. Right? It's the potential for a body for that being. That's the almighty supreme. Okay? Okay, so that's what they're referring to. A very fancy way of referring to the almighty supreme. You see, they want you to be thinking about all this complexity, and you'll see why when we get to the next paragraph. Instead of just saying almighty supreme, they say it in that very complex way. Okay, so the unifying power potential is the sovereignty of the experiential supremacy, which, in the presence of the impersonal energy unity of the universe... Okay, like on the chart here, like on the threefold actuality chart, you have three energies, right? Material energy, mind energy, and spirit energy. Right? Those together, coordinated together as a triunity, right, is the impersonal energy unity of the universe. There's only one facet of deity that directly engages the impersonal energy unity, right, that engages infinity as a triunity, and engages the totality of reality as a triunity. That's the Paradise Trinity. So, so when they say in the presence of the impersonal energy unity of the universe, you're thinking, okay, and the Paradise Trinity engages that. Oh yeah, they made sure I was thinking about the Paradise Trinity at the beginning of the paragraph. Okay. So you have the contrast between this summation of the finite, you know, as this potential for the Supreme Being, you know, the Almighty Supreme, in contrast to just, you know, the literal energy. It's not like all of the energy in the grand universe is going to get balled up and made into a body, you know, for the Supreme Being. Right? You have this, you have this reflection of the totality, and so so there's this contrast between, you know, the wholeness of that reflection and the partness of all the parts. Right? And that's what they're referring to. See, that constitutes a reality tension. This tension between the Almighty and just, you know, the literal energy fact of the universe. What coordinates that that tension? What what makes it so that that isn't just a showstopper of, well, there's this tension, and you know, what can we do about it? Right? We're just stuck in this unresolvable tension. See, because it says it constitutes a reality tension that can be resolved only through adequate unification with the experiential personality realities of experiential deity. So again, he's like, oh, that kind of sounds like that complicated thing that they, you know, the unifying power potential, the sovereignty of the experiential supremacy. Seems like they're kind of rattling off another sequence like that. Okay. And remember how I pointed out that they were setting it up in the previous section. They were using deity with a lowercase d, and also deity with a capital D, uppercase D. And without getting into any complexity, you can just kind of think in simple terms. The lowercase d is indicating a bottom-up fact, and the capital D is indicating a top-down fact. Right? And the whole point is always bringing those, that upwelling and that downwelling into relationship so that there's a super-additive consequence, the relationship between the two. And you can see here they've got a capital D deity, experiential deity. So there's, speaking of something, do you want a picture coming top down? So through adequate unification with the experiential personality realities. Okay, so not the power. So we have the power personality synthesis of the Supreme Being. We bring it down. We've got, we're going to have two halves instead of, you know, one fact. We've got the power pattern half, if you will, the Almighty Supreme. What is the personal purposive half that they're obviously referring to? The personality realities. The Universal Mother. Right? You've got two facts. You've got the power pattern, the Almighty Supreme, that individuality, and you have the personal purposive individuality, the Universal Mother. Okay. This distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other. We're just thinking about the totality, you know, the summation that is the Almighty Supreme and all the parts. Okay. Individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole. We brought in the Paradise Trinity, being what directly engages, and through the individuality of the whole. Only through adequate unification, and the word unification is suggesting the mother too. Right, you've got that other fact, and of course, where does mother deity that's in the Universal Mother? What does that stem from? The Paradise Trinity, right? See, except in relation to the whole, and through the individuality of the whole, the mother. But here, I purposely didn't treat it in kind of deity fashion by saying the mother. I'm doing the individuality mode, and so I'm talking about the supreme being, the he, downstepped into the finite as an it and a she. The Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother. Okay. So that's what's between the lines there. Right? And the relationship of the Mother to the Trinity, the relationship of the Trinity to the impersonal energy unity, right? The triunity of finite reality. Yeah. What's coordinating this all together? What's the context in which it can be coordinated? The presence of the Paradise Trinity, and what is and who is the coordinator? The Universal Mother. Remember how it all, should hearken you back to the title of the first section, physical coordination. Okay, so that's
complicated.
It's very complicated. It's going to get even more complicated in the next paragraph.
No.
Yeah, they've just started.
So can you bring it down to, somebody like me who's at ninth grade level? Probably at kindergarten level in terms of the universe thing is concerned. So as an individual, mortal, mm-hmm. I mean, I can sit here and I can comprehend the word, comprehend what you're saying, mm-hmm. but trying to fit into it is hard for me.
That's coming up, I think, in the third paragraph.
Okay. What else is new?
I'll try to give it.
Never mind, I'll wait.
I'll try to take this very abstract stuff that's really kind of talking about deity, right? All of this logic of deity, details of deity, physics of deity, and try to bring it so that it's relatable. We'll do that as we get into it. But see, the first thing they do though is they put the real, or at least suggest the full details up front, and the other thing that I want to go ahead and mention here right now is, like I said, why do they call them supreme creators? Okay, it isn't just because they embody a relationship to supremacy. After all, you could kind of think, it's like, well, I mean, technically, Creator Son doesn't literally embody supremacy, supreme type deity, until they become a Master Son. Right? Right? But even as a Creator Son, they're a supreme creator. It's because literally they are the means for creating part of the supreme being. Okay, how does that work? They're literally creating the supreme, in part anyway. The part that they're doing. So you have the experiential deity of the supreme creators, like we were just referring to. They're mentioning this innate divinity they have, deity likeness. Yeah, you have a question?
So would that kind of be like your father's father? The Supreme Creator creating the Supreme Being.
You're kind of understanding how you have a hierarchy of fathers, right? The Supreme Being is your Supreme Father, and downstepped in time, you have the Super Fathers of the Ancients of Days. You have the local universe father of our particular local universe has a creator son, a father. And you're seeing that, instead of looking at it from the top down, where you think of a supreme father kind of getting downstepped as a hierarchy of lesser, if you will, in the hierarchy fathers, we're looking at it going bottom up, where we see how those fathers have a potential to have a superadditive consequence eventually of the Supreme Father. And you can understand why they could do that, because if you look at it from the top down, it's like, well, of course that could happen, because from the top down, those Supreme Creators are just downstepped expressions of that Supreme Father. So of course you could turn around and follow it back up, and they would give rise to that transcendent fact of the Supreme Father, the Supreme Being. Yeah, very, very, very good. All right, so you've got So in this bottom-up mode, you've got the experiential deity that's inherent in all the supreme creators, all kinds of different flavors of experiential deity. But all that difference of flavors is all in a common context. The power, personality, unity of the sevenfold. Right? You have that facet of deity. It's called the sevenfold. Fundamental quality of deity is unity. Right? You could speak of that as a power, personality, unity. Right? You've got all the individuality of all these supreme creators, but they're all in a unified context of this of the power, personality, unity of the sevenfold. And then maybe just you bring out the psychic circles in the sevenfold chart. Remember that it says the psychic circles and the sevenfold, not God the sevenfold, but that facet of deity that's called the sevenfold. And we're looking at these creators. You've got the creator sons. You've got the creator mother spirits. Here's the ancients of days. Here's the master spirits. Right? You've got these sevenfold creators. And you're not just calling them sevenfold creators because there's seven rows, right, in this. Right? It's more literal than that. They're literally, this is not the universal father, just purely existentially as an infinite person at the center of the Isle of Paradise. Not at all. That is only the universal father in the sevenfold. That aspect of the father that can actually be in the sevenfold. There's an infinite amount that can't be, right? That's just the universal father in the sevenfold.
Would it be true to say that those that are listed under the sevenfold creators heading are one thing or one unit of deity, and then those are the facets of it?
Yeah. So when you start to think about the details more, from the unity viewpoint, you have one facet of deity called the sevenfold. But if you flip things around to the individuality viewpoint, where you don't have deity, right, you just have individuals, individuality, right, you've got an uncountable number of individuals. You don't just have all of the creators, you have all the controllers too, right? Especially when you get down to the trenches with the controllers, Franalanx and Chronaldex, okay, their number is beyond our numerical concept, right? So it is effectively an infinite complexity of individuality, but if you flip it around and look at it from the unity viewpoint, it's just one facet of deity. And so you've got, there's this sevenfold type deity within all of those sevenfold creators. And we're just focusing in on just the supreme creators, right? Part of it. But see, they have this commonality of nature. There's a unity of them, like you're suggesting, because it is, if you will, it's their individuality within that unity. Okay? The fact that they have that they don't just stand as island universe individualities, but they stand within a common unity, it means that they function in a unified mode, besides all of their individual modes of functioning, acting.
Volitionally or inherently?
Volitionally, yeah. But from if you go to the just thinking about it in a deity mode, you don't have to think about it being volitionally. You just have the functioning of their experiential deity doing this. But if you're in the mode where you're talking about the Almighty Supreme, the Supreme Being, the Universal Mother, if you're speaking in individuality terms, all the Creator Sons, you'd have to think of this as a volitional act, right? To choose to function as part of that collective wholeness within the sevenfold. Okay, so what we're thinking is, so you have the experiential deity of the supreme creators in the power, personality, unity of the sevenfold, expressed in supremacy, is a facet of deity called the Almighty. Or if you want to, like I just said, if you want to think about those individuals volitionally acting, choosing to act, you know, in that coordinate mode, right? They are creating the Almighty Supreme. They are supreme creators, and they are creating the Almighty Supreme as a bottom-up, as an upwelling phenomenon, which is then going to come into relationship with the downwelling, personal purposive aspect, the Universal Mother. You know, and if you think about it temporally, eventually those two individualities integrate into one individuality. It and she integrate into he, and a being that is localized in a certain X somewhere, you know, in an extension space. Only he's nowhere in the finite. He's an absonite being, right? If you're going to draw an X about where he's standing, you've got to get into an absonite geometry to draw that X.
And that's the supreme being.
And that's the supreme being, that integration of the Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother.
Didn't they conjecture somewhere where he would be in at headquarters of the seventh superuniverse?
Yeah, but of course, that headquarters of the seventh superuniverse would be a location in absonite space then, and what the heck that would look like, right? That's basically what they're invoking. They're invoking that whole bit of them being literally supreme creators, giving rise to the Almighty Supreme. Now, in the next paragraph, they're encouraging you to not think in such individuality terms of them creating this individual called the Almighty Supreme, but to think of it more in deity terms, as we'll see. And when you do that, it gets a little more complex, but you get a better sense of the picture. Exactly how this really comes about, that you eventually can have a supreme being, the supreme being. When you speak of it in just in individuality terms, it's like, well, what's the difference between all that, you know, blah, 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 all these fancy words they're using, and just imagining that you've got these magic supreme creators and they all wave their magic wands in unison and magically make another magic man, right? Right, I mean, the actual logic of it, of what is going on, you know, is not apparent when you look at it like that. You know, the real substance of the phenomenon is only discernible when you flip things around to the unity view and look at it from the unity viewpoint.
If you don't have the understanding.
Right. Deity is what, you know, is the substance that's behind the veil of observation. What's literally going on. Okay, so that's what they want to get to. Kind of say the same thing again. Only now wanting you to flip it around and think of it more in deity terms. Okay, so let's read that.
The personality realities of the Supreme Being come forth from the paradise deities. And on the pilot world of the outer Havona circuit, unified with the power prerogatives of the Almighty Supreme, coming up from the creator divinities of the grand universe. God the Supreme, as a person, existed in Havona before the creation of the seven superuniverses, but he functioned only on spiritual levels. The evolution of the almighty power of supremacy by diverse divinity synthesis in the evolving universes eventuated in the new power presence of deity in a new power presence of deity, which coordinated with the spiritual person of the Supreme in Havona by means of the Supreme Mind, which concomitantly translated from the potential resident in the infinite mind of the Supreme Infinite Spirit to the active functional mind of the Supreme Being.
Again, she's just so straightforward. Okay. Okay. In many ways, like I said, they're just saying the same thing. Okay, but let's pick through it in this mode. Okay, so it says first. It says the personality realities of the Supreme Being. It's like, okay, so you see how they're saying, okay, now think about how you were just in that mode where you're talking about individuals like the Supreme Being. You know, even though we didn't say it, you can see the fact that they say it that way. They were wanting you to think about the Supreme Being, the Almighty Supreme, and the Universal Mother. But then they're saying the personality realities of the Supreme Being come forth from the paradise deities, you know, etc. And let's just stop there. Okay, so they say, come forth from the paradise deities. You can turn there if you want. Up on in a single column, it's page 12 in the foreword. A nice little pithy expression of this is found in section 8 in the foreword, where I guess it's about in the middle of that section. It's the third paragraph from the end of section 9. Or, I mean, section 8, I'm looking at 9 here in front of me and saying it, of section 8, you know, that paragraph that starts, the grand universe is, okay, so skip over that sentence, going to that second sentence, it says, God the Supreme is potential in the Paradise Trinity, from whom he derives his personality and spirit attributes. But he is now actualizing in the Creator Sons, Ancients of Days, and the Master Spirits, from whom he derives his power as Almighty to the super universes of time and space. So they're talking about the two aspects, see there again. And you can see this, the second part of that is just what we were just talking about, the Supreme Creators giving rise to the Almighty Supreme. And you can see they're wanting you to think about the He, that localized individual, not an individuality of a whole, right? That's not localized, but just, so it's a She, but a localized individual, so you call it a He, you know, the Supreme Being, so they're using He. But they're saying, you notice how they say God the Supreme, to start off that sentence. That's definitely putting you in a top-down mode when you say God the Supreme. And it says God the Supreme. So the top, you know, especially if you're thinking going down into the finite, you're thinking that downwelling aspect, right? That is God the Mother. Downwelling into seeing God the Supreme is potential in the Paradise Trinity. Okay, so in other words, that downwelling facet stems from the Paradise Trinity. Yeah, it's the Mother, right, that stems from the Paradise Trinity. And then this, you know, very specific statement says, from whom he derives his personality and spirit attributes. Okay, so, and you think of the He getting downstepped, and the personal purposive part now being a She. Notice how they split it up into two parts, personality and spirit attributes. And they have the spirit one as the root one. Spirit and then personality added onto that foundation. So it's not spirit and personality, but personality and spirit. You got to always notice this order. We actually are going to use that here. So to think about this personal purposive aspect it's not as simple as the upwelling thing of the Almighty Supreme. It's like, well, that wasn't that simple either. It took all of the complexity of the Supreme Creators to express it, yes. But once it's expressed, it's done in very simple, singular fashion. But this downstepping has two parts to it. Okay. Remember at the end of the previous paper, remember how these two papers go together. At the end of the previous paper, right, that very last paragraph of paper 55, remember how they threw in that parenthetical and I pointed it out that we'd get to that? It says, none of us entertain a satisfactory concept of what will happen when the grand universe, and then parenthetically they say, the super universe is as dependent on Havona, becomes entirely settled in light and life. Yeah. And what was that bit about emphasizing the seven super universes as dependent on Havona? That's right at the end of paper 55.
Okay, I got that section.
The very last paragraph of paper 55. Okay. They're bringing that into play here now. That you've got, when you think about this downwelling, it has a footprint, if you will, in two places. It has a footprint relative to the eternity in the central universe, and then a footprint relative to time out here in the super universe level. Okay. And so, what's first? Well, that footprint in eternity, obviously, and then time would be built upon that foundation of eternity. The footprint in the central universe in eternity is called the Supreme Spirit. Notice how, back in our section 6 in the Universal Unity paper, notice how they mention this bit about God the Supreme as a person existed in Havona, right, and all that stuff, right? Okay. See, that's what we're going to be getting to. But let's, before we jump right in, just notice the other little thing they throw in before that. Okay, so they say, remember how it starts out again. So the personality realities of the Supreme Being come forth from the Paradise Deities. We're just referring to that stemming from the Paradise Trinity. And on the pilot world of the outer Havona circuit, unify with the power prerogatives of the Almighty Supreme coming up from the creator divinities of the grand universe. Okay, well, that was what we were just doing. And notice how, they're using those individuality terms like we were, like the Almighty Supreme and the Supreme Being and the coming up, having that being the upwelling thing. They're saying there's this pre-existent fact in Havona that's going to meet, at the interface point, the pilot world of the outer circuit, right? And you're kind of picturing that the Supreme Spirit in the central universe being engaged by the Almighty Supreme coming up out of the super universe level. Okay, and that's all fine. We're wanting to go beyond just that thought and recognize that, as they were hinting at up there in the foreword, that it's not as simple as it sounds when you continue reading here. When it says, "So God the Supreme, as a person, existed in Havona before the creation of the seven super universes, but he functioned only on spiritual levels." So, and you remember when when they talk about getting to the sixth circuit of Havona, it's not like you find a personality presence there. You just find a spirit presence there. Right? You definitely don't find the Supreme Being there. You don't find that absentite being standing on one of those worlds on the sixth circuit. And you don't even find some sort of diffused personal presence on that seventh circuit. All you find is a spirit presence. And I'm telling you that, you know, the precise name for that is the Supreme Spirit, capital S, Supreme, capital S, Spirit, the Supreme Spirit. And what that is, remember, personality is spirit pattern. From a finite point of view, supreme is your relationship to eternity. Right? See, so you have the Supreme Spirit, not the finite spirit, the Supreme Spirit, there in the eternal central universe. So before you have, before you can have that spirit pattern, personality, identify with something, you have to have a spirit fact for it to identify to. It's spirit pattern. Right? There in the central universe, there's this presence, that's the Supreme Spirit. And then subsequent to that, you get a personal purposive expression that comes, that begins to manifest. Not in the central universe. Like I said, this is very complicated. That part of it is expressed reciprocally out in the super universe level as the finite upholder. You have the Supreme Spirit inside the central universe. The reciprocal outside of the central universe is the finite upholder, the mother. Okay. And that's a personal purposive presence. So the thing that they aren't directly speaking to is you don't just have that function only on spiritual levels. So a he downstepped into just a spirit presence that's not even really a she. But it's the foundation for the she, and the fullness of the she is both inside and outside the central universe. Right? You have the universal mother on the out here as an expression in time, predicated on a footprint in the eternal central universe of the Supreme Spirit. And seeing that's, like I said, you notice in the foreword that it says from whom he derives his personality and spirit attributes. See, spirit first, and then thinking of this evolving into manifestation out here in the temporal domain of the personal part. In the same way you start with just a creative spirit in a local universe, and eventually that becomes a creative mother spirit as a personal presence starts to manifest. Right? And that's predicated on mother deity being added to the spirit deity of that creative spirit. Right, so now there's both types of deity, and it's personalized as such. Right? Spirit hyphen mother deity is personalized as a creative mother spirit. So see, in that same way that it starts out just spirit and then becomes personal, but it's all, you know, within a local universe there. In this bigger picture, it's more complicated. Like I said, like they reminded you of in that parenthetical at the end of the previous paper, the seven super universes as dependent on Havona. See? The universal mother presence is dependent upon Havona, the presence of the Supreme Spirit, and together you've got the full personal, purposive, spiritual downwelling footprint, right, of the Supreme Being. Okay, then we'll get to you. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. All right.
Well, the creative spirit and the Supreme Spirit are personalized, are they not?
No, the Supreme Spirit is just present in the central universe, and you don't want to think about it as that as a personality presence. Like they stressed here,
okay.
He functioned, he downstepped, functioned only on spiritual levels, not on personal levels.
Okay.
Only on spiritual levels.
Now the creative spirit, should we think of
okay,
creative spirit in the same mode?
Right. So for with a local universe, right, just think of the creative spirit, pre primary eruption,
right,
as just being a spirit presence. And it's a very, it's not a very tangible spirit presence at that, even, because remember, as a creative spirit, she's really not so much functioning as a creator, but a controller. And she's not a she, it's an it. Right? It's functioning as a controller, that creative spirit. Right? So, you see, what's going on, like in a local universe, what they're referring to here is what that is predicated on in the big picture of the total finite is this very complicated thing that requires both the eternity of the central universe and the temporality of the super universe level together to fully have a place for it to all be. The Supreme Spirit can be there, not out here, right? Because Supreme is tied to eternity, so it's got to be just in the confines of the eternal central universe. The finite part can be out here, the finite upholder. So you have those two reciprocal expressions, the Supreme Spirit, the finite upholder. And the finite upholder, see, just like I have parenthetically, in the psychic circles in the sevenfold, you go up the cosmic mothers, see, and I've got the universal mother, and then parenthetically I said, if you want to think about it in deity terms, the finite upholder. The finite upholder is not a designation for an individual, it's a designation for a facet of deity. And there's a deity presence out here, and the mother, and that's predicated on a spirit presence of the Supreme Spirit in the central universe. Okay. It's all very complicated. Okay.
So when we get to the outer circle, the first, and the spirit presence of the Supreme is there, but not without the personality. We as spirit beings, because this spirit presence is going to be spirit substance, is going to be recognizable to us.
Right.
The personage of the Supreme Being is not necessarily there,
no.
But the spirit substance that, you know, will probably permeate.
Right, on the sixth circuit.
We will be able to recognize that as a spirit, because we would be able to recognize spirit substance by that time and get a sense for what that is, so to speak.
Right, you will feel that presence of the Supreme Spirit on the sixth circuit. See, we don't want to get into all the complexities. You've got to transition.
I'm just trying to get a picture of
right.
it.
Right, but on the seventh circuit, you're still working through transitions with the master spirits, but they take you the rest of the way to the sixth circuit, where intimately pervading the whole sixth circuit,
the entire circuit,
is a spirit presence that you will feel. Well,
so
the Supreme Spirit.
Or, you know, when you think about this further out, it's just kind of fun more than you guys really going to mean anything for quite a while of our existence. But that when the whole set, all seven super universes are all settled in light and life, etc., that particular, you know, Supreme Spirit will then begin to manifest or be recognizable in the evolutionary world, you know, in the finite realm, so to speak.
No.
No, okay.
No, see, what will happen is the Supreme Spirit, the Almighty Supreme, the Universal Mother, all three of those facts integrate into one fact, the Supreme Being. And no longer is the Supreme Spirit present in Havona. Right. Right, remember, when the grand universe is settled in light and life, Havona is going to change.
Absolutely.
And it's not like it's going to extend out here. It gets bottled up into the Supreme Being. The spirit, nature internal in the Supreme Being is what we're now calling a diffused presence in the central universe called the Supreme Spirit.
When you say change, you don't necessarily mean that the worlds are going to disappear type thing.
No, not, but the mode of functioning of all those billion worlds will change, just like it all changed when the super universe level was established. Yeah. Whatever the heck that was going on in the central universe stopped, being the mode of the day, right? It morphed into what's going on there now.
Okay.
Right.
It's kind of like a grandfather
grand universe scale primary eruption.
See, because initially, before there was a super universe level, all that was going on in the central universe is some sort of a downstepped expression of what's going on the aisle. But now, the central universe is a super additive consequence, like they're referring to here, of what comes out from the aisle and what comes in from the central universe, or from the super universe level. You know, now the central universe is a super additive consequence of an outgoing and an incoming.
We are part of that incoming.
And we're part of that incoming, yeah.
Incoming.
Yeah.
Incoming.
This is off topic, but
tuck and roll.
The outer space levels, will there be any creative activity out there before the super universe is settled in light and life?
No one knows.
Okay.
What do you mean by creating? There's rocks.
I mean, there is, you know, I mean, at the very least, right, you've got to finish all of the finite evolution that's going on in all, you know, that's going on and will ever go on in all four outer space levels. I mean, because if there's anything about all those, each of those levels that can only be brought into existence through an evolutionary process, that's got to be all done as part of evolution coming to an end, right? I mean, the whole finite process comes to an end, not only in the, you know, in the central universe and the super universe level, but all four outer space levels too, right? I mean, you know, the Virgo cluster and all that sort of stuff out there, I mean, that's all a finite evolutionary process right now. All that finite evolutionary process has to come to an end, right? And the question is, well, I mean, will you get some sort of a total material phenomenon built all the way out to the ends of the fourth outer space level? You know, and that seems like an awful lot to build, you know, relative to how much more personality evolution there is to, you know, to go through in the seven super universes. You know, we've talked about that. You know, you wonder, it's like, well, there will there be this like incredible exponential thing where, you know, additively where things are coming together, evolving out there, and then just right, and the whole thing crystallizes into existence, all of, you know, or is a lot of the material stuff, say in those outer levels, doesn't involve physical evolution. Maybe most of the physical stuff will be eventuated out there, not evolved at all. I mean, you know, I mean, you could wonder if maybe it's evolved a lot in the first one, less in the second, less in the third, less in the fourth. I mean, you can speculate endlessly about how, you know, no one knows. The revelators don't know. No one knows.
Yep. I don't know if I'm wording this right, but God, the absolute,
though? From a top-down point of view, right, you know, you've got God the Absolute and the Cosmos Infinite. And, you know, you don't just have the completed Master Universe, you have the completed Cosmos Infinite. Right, so from a top-down point of view, you know everything from the quote-unquote beginning, because your beginning is the end, right, from a top-down point of view. Again, you got to remember, time isn't some absolute backdrop. The absolute of time is eternity, not time, right? So you have to remember that you can't absolutize how things appear to you. It appears that everything is subject to this absolute backdrop of time. We all are forced to just step along the ruler of time. That's not a reality. That's just an appearance, you know. And we project it and absolutize it falsely outward. It's not the way the universe is, really. And that's a mind-twisting thought, right? You know, and it unravels all of current physical theory and everything, right? That fact, right? Because we've got all kinds of physical theories that assume that time is a reality. Time's not a reality. But I digress. Okay, but so let's get back to this here. So they're invoking all that complexity of having the finite upholder out here, you know, or if you will, the universal mother, the supreme spirit in there in the central universe, as a joint downstepped expression of the personal purposive, you know, and hence spiritual part of the picture, in distinction from the upwelling part that's coming from the supreme creators, the power pattern part. And so the power pattern upwelling and the personal purposive downwelling come together from a temporal point of view, right, from the time viewpoint, and eventually yield the power personality synthesis that is the supreme being. Okay, and another way of bringing in the complexity of it to appreciate, it's like, well, in what context, what encompassing context do you have, like, say, to think about it kind of just simply, do you have these two individualities, the Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother, in what encompassing context do you have those two individualities integrated together eventually as one individuality, the Supreme Being? Right, and that's the Supreme Mind, see, that they're invoking there. So let's look at that. Maybe just going back to after it says, but he functioned only on spiritual levels, that whole bit about the Supreme Spirit in the central universe. Okay, and then see the evolution of the Almighty. See, and notice the Almighty. That's a fat name for a facet of deity. So they've transitioned. Initially, they were calling it the Almighty Supreme. That's a name for an individual from the individuality viewpoint. You flip it around to the unity viewpoint, okay, and you have a facet of deity called the Almighty. The evolution of the Almighty power of supremacy by diverse divinity synthesis in the evolving universes eventuated in a new power presence of deity which coordinated, think of it, the mother, with the spiritual person of the Supreme in Havona. So there you can see they're giving you a way of thinking about how you've got the Supreme Spirit and the Almighty Supreme, and the Mother is actually coordinating those two coming together. And but just kind of just begging, it's like, well, it says it's coordinated. Is that like magic? No, if something is coordinated, there must be a coordinator. There must be a hand behind that. And how do they kind of tease you into recognition? They say, which coordinated with the spiritual person of the Supreme and Voda by means of the Supreme Mind. Okay? So, remember how we said up front, thinking about how often you want to play mind and mother deity together in a picture to get a fuller sense of it. So now from a totally top-down point of view, the Supreme Being, another name for the Supreme Being, as an absonite encompassing of the finite influence, is the Supreme Mind. Yeah, the Supreme Mind is another name for the Supreme Being. So if we think about that encompassing of the whole, of the finite, on the one hand, but we penetrate down in. So we would think about what transcendently is this encompassing the mind, the Supreme Mind. Down in, there's going to be a mind presence, you know, who bestows mind down within, the Mother, always, okay? So indirectly, they're getting you to think about, yes, there's the Supreme Spirit. Yes, there's the Almighty Supreme. There's also the Universal Mother, right? That personal purposive essence and presence, if you will, of that transcendent encompassing the Supreme Mind, right? Okay? And then just, we'll get to the question. And just that other little thing, just notice how they could have put a period after the Supreme Mind, but they wanted to just challenge you to even more complexity. See, so talking about the Supreme Mind, it's like, well, where does the Supreme Mind come from? Which concomitantly translated from the potential resident in the infinite mind of the infinite spirit to the active functional mind of the Supreme Being. See, right there, you're just seeing that it's another name for the Supreme Being, right? The Supreme Being has a Supreme Mind, and you could call him the Supreme Mind because of that fact. Obviously, you can think of the Supreme Mind as a downstepped expression of the Infinite Mind. Right? And Notice, yeah, see, notice how they have the infinite mind, it's not capitalized, of the infinite spirit. But again, like I said, remember when they're doing that, right? If you capitalize it, the infinite mind, you know, I and M capitalized, that's another name for the infinite mother spirit, right? That's why they're saying the infinite spirit there, not the conjoint actor. I see, so between the lines, you've got the infinite mind, i.e. the infinite mother spirit. And you're, like I said, so you're thinking, well, the supreme mind coming down from that, and if I penetrate down in, I'll have, I've got this mother fact. See, that's between the lines of what they're suggesting. They're trying to get you to think about the universal mother down there in the finite. And that the supreme mind wholeness being brought down within. The supreme mind encompassment being brought down within as a wholeness, that is the presence of the universal mother, that is the presence of a coordinating influence that knows no bounds within the finite, that is ubiquitous throughout the totality of the finite, and it is the context within which all things can come together in a synchronized fashion. Right? It is the way for all this dance we've been reading about to happen. Right?
Hence the unification of evolutionary deity.
Right? Yeah.
In other words, so the supreme mind, i.e. the supreme being, which is a balanced up expression in a way of the infinite mind.
Right.
More than the supreme mind, but that
is
the mind that is evolving in the finite universe right now?
No. Okay. See, it's very important. When you're talking about the supreme mind, you're not talking about something that's bubbling up and evolving into existence. You're talking about something that's already in existence from the top down. And it's why there are, in supremacy, there are no coincidences. Why is that? Why is it that no matter what set of finite facts comes into play via a non-predestined expression of free will, you know, no matter who decides to go iniquitous, what choices are made, there is something that's transcendent of all those finite details. A transcendent, the supreme mind, that encompassing supreme mind, where the supreme mind can adapt to any set of finite facts.
Which may seem coincidental to us.
It's why, it's like, wow, you know, when all is said and done, it was okay that Lucifer, you know, started a rebellion and went to iniquity, and et cetera. Where is this transcendent big picture of things? It's like, well, yeah, I can work with that. It's literally that transcendent being, the mindedness of that transcendent being, that transcendent of all finite details, right? It can work with anything. It can take any set of finite details to good. Doesn't matter what the finite set of details are, because it's transcendent of that. It sees things in a bigger picture. You know, whereas we're lost down in the weeds, and it's like, well, what can I possibly do good with that, right? This is an inherently hopeless situation or whatever. It's like, not enough. Just get up to a higher vantage point. And just rearrange them like that. Yeah. That's cool.
Stop worrying about it.
Mind is the thing. I guess the past all understand it.
Yeah.
Okay. But that we're talking about a piece that's dependent upon understanding that comes down from above. That passes all understanding.
Right. See, and you're going, oh, it passes all finite understanding. In other words, it's supreme understanding.
Okay.
See?
Wow. That's what we're missing.
You're missing starting with eternity and then going to time. Right? I keep stressing this. See, this is a fancy way of just saying the exact same thing. Right? You know, like I said, supreme is related to eternity. Finite is related to time, right? Start with the supreme and then go to the finite. Start with eternity and then go to time. Start with a supreme understanding. Start with an with a peace that passes all finite understanding. It's transcendent of all finite understanding. It's supreme understanding. It's predicated on eternity. Start with eternity, then do the time details.
The big picture.
Right. But look at how it's sad to record that almost no one does that. If there's a time detail that doesn't meet your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices, like if elections turn out in ways you weren't expecting, everyone just unravels.
Right?
Because all of their delusions of certain temporalities being declared to be eternalities, suddenly evaporates. Right? Delusions of false success. I have a hold of eternity. No, you don't. You have a hold of time that you falsely deluded into eternity. And we'll quickly demonstrate that. Let's see how you respond when we do this. Right.
Yeah.
People just come apart. There's not even peace that is understandable. Right? All peace evaporates. Right? Even any peace that you have by grace and your encirclement in the Holy Spirit by grace. Remember, that's a threat of supremacy. That's a threat of relationship to eternity by grace. Even that is lost. Right? I mean, it's sad to record just how pitiful mankind responds to even the most trivial of stimuli. There's not one shred of indication of eternity. In other words, there's no religious nature there at all. Zero. Right? And it doesn't matter how much they say they're religious or spiritual, by their fruits you shall know them. There's no fruits of eternity there. It's trivially obvious. You're nothing but a cork in a vast ocean, and a hurricane is blowing through your little section of the sea here, right? And it's pretty pitiful, right? I mean, you know, this is what's missing.
You don't even have a wetsuit.
Right?
Water wings.
So, anyway, back to the point. So you got these two paragraphs. So you got a big paragraph break. They're going through all that complexity of invoking, you know, issues of deity and stuff like I was trying to flesh out a bit there. To set the stage for what? Like John was saying, it's like, okay, so that's all fine and dandy, but I mean, how does that help me in my life? Well, you could see I was already trying to allude a little bit, right? Trying to get you in relationship to that top-down mode. I mean, when all is said and done, it's fine and dandy to be related to the upwelling that's coming from the supreme creators and the Almighty, but that only goes so far. You really have got to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother and get a top-down welling, top-down stability.
Right? That's achievable here and now.
Sure. Yes. How do we know that? Because there was a guy that lived 2,000 years ago who did it not because he was God, he's innately divine, but because he was a man, Jesus the man. The fourth epical revelation is not Michael of Nebadon. That's of no use to us. Right? The fourth epical revelation is Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus the man. Right? He didn't cheat to get peace that passes all understanding by using his Michaelness.
He worked it.
Who cares if Michael has peace that passes all understanding? What use is that to me? Right? I could have a religion about Jesus, and I could exalt it by making it a religion about Michael of Nebadon, but that's not going to be of any use. I've got to know that I do it. You know, exalted Jesusism is not going to help. I mean, you need to know that you can do this. You can consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Jesus had the peace that passed all understanding, not because he was Michael, but because he consecrated his mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. And that's why.
You couldn't call it an incarnation as a man if he wasn't a man.
I mean, the very fact that the eternal Mother Son and the infinite Mother Spirit said after the Mount of Transfiguration, yeah, you've got yourself fully square here, but there's still some things you can do relative to Father Deity, right? I mean, see, that's just reminding you. He's got the consecration of mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother pinned down. Right? It's all square there. Okay, but he still had some father tasks, you know, that he, you know, he could do. Okay, but again, he's doing those father tasks, you know, as a creator son, right? Which again is totally aside from anything that's any immediate use to me. Like I said, I mean, you know, the public ministry is interesting in many ways. Right. But the immediate relevancy, you know, is Jesus the man. That's the fourth epical revelation. And that's why the last paper, you know, the first section is titled Jesus the man. Right? It's the faith of Jesus, not the faith of Michael. Who cares about the faith of Michael? What use of that is that to me? Yes, Michael has a faith and it's all perfect and everything. That's all groovy. But, you know, that's not much use to me. Unless I want to worship the faith of Michael of Nebadon. I want to have a religion about Michael of Nebadon. No.
That wasn't his religion.
Right, it wasn't his religion. He didn't have a religion about Michael of Nebadon. And he never, ever went about talking about Jesus. Enough about you. Let's talk about me. I mean, is that the way Jesus approached people?
What would Jesus do? Ever?
He would dismiss you and start talking about himself.
Yeah.
You know, did he meet someone and say, you know, that reminds me of that difficulty I had in the grocery store today. Yeah. No, the work is important. The self is not. All right. Right. We're trying to get into this.
But you can understand how it's we can sit here and we can read the revelation and we can understand what you're talking about.
Right.
But for most people who don't have a clue what we have, it's not so easy for them to get to that point.
Not only is it not so easy for them to get to the point, the revelators have no expectation of most people getting that, because most people can't. Right? This is not a dispensational revelation.
Yeah, fortunately.
It's an epical revelation, but it's not a dispensational one. It's not meant for everyone. It's meant for the few that can get to it. Right? It's meant for those individuals to be the rocks in the storm. Right? Look at how easy it is for everything to turn into turmoil right now. Because we have no anchors. We have no cosmic citizens. Right? This is about establishing some individuals who are anchors and others can look to and find stability in the midst of a storm. Right?
And faith, right? Trust.
No, that's very important. You know, just recognize the obvious. I mean, these two paragraphs, I mean, you don't need anything else in the book. Just think about these two paragraphs that we just spent an hour and a half trying to slightly unpack. Mm-hmm. How many people on the planet are looking for that, are even capable of getting to that?
I don't get it.
Okay, but
I had to turn my phone off.
But the very fact that you might be interested in being in the room, you know, while we're doing this, does say something. It says you have a curiosity. See, most people on the planet don't even have enough curiosity to approach those two paragraphs. Okay, but the fact that you're here, no matter how much your eyes are glazed over, okay, is a positive thing. Okay, just think about. Don't think about what you aren't. Think about what you are. Think about the potential that you're demonstrating by being willing to be here. And try to cock your head and figure out what the heck Chris is talking about. That's a curiosity that comes from the biologic uplift of mankind 40,000 years ago. And there isn't a lot of that in play on the planet. Most people, not curious, not in the least. Right? They would have left, you know, after the first 10 minutes. But you're still here after an hour and a half of this torture. Right?
Right?
Okay. Okay. All right, so let's bring it home a little bit. See, there's a big paragraph break. Take a deep breath. Let's see what else they say here.
The material-minded creatures of the evolutionary worlds of the seven super-universes can comprehend deity unity only as it is evolved in this...
Evolving
in this power-personality synthesis of the Supreme Being. On any level of existence, God cannot exceed the conceptual capacity of the beings who live on such a level. Mortal man must, through the recognition of truth, the appreciation of beauty, and the worship of goodness, evolve the recognition of a God of love, and then progress through ascending deity levels to the comprehension of the Supreme. Deity, having been thus grasped as unified in power, can then be personalized in spirit to creature understanding and attainment.
Let's deal with the relatively straightforward last thing there first, just because it's kind of immediately what we've been talking about. So when it says, and then progress, you know, so starting there after the God of love, and then progress through ascending deity levels. Okay, so you see they're using lowercase d. So they are getting you to think about going up in relationship to the supreme creators, you know, and you in relationship to them is part of that manifesting of the Almighty through them, right? I mean, they are reflecting your ascending realization into that summation that is the Almighty Supreme. Right? That's the Almighty Supreme is a summation of all of our you know, personal activity, the reality of the total finite, and we're parts of that reality. And so, see, they're saying you're ascending up through that whole phenomenon of the activity of the Supreme Creators, okay, and through ascending deity levels to the comprehension of the Supreme, so kind of getting all the way up to the top. And then it says, deity, having been thus grasped as unified in power, so kind of leveraging off of the facet of deity that's called the Almighty, there's a little essence there. Remember, you can speak of God the Almighty. Now, you don't think of that, you know, when you go to the deity side, you don't have to think about it as just it-like, right? Like you do with the Almighty Supreme. Right? It's a facet of deity, and it has a personalizable bit, you know, that you speak of when you say God the Almighty. So they're saying leverage off of that subtle essence of personalizable nature that is God the Almighty, having been thus grasped as unified in power, can then be personalized in spirit to creature understanding and attainment. Go all the way up with it and then turn around and synchronize with the direct, more tangible, in that consequential mode, personalization is downwelling as God the Mother. That's what they're getting at, see? Personalized in spirit, God the Mother. But see, it's a process. You're not looking for another individual, like I've said so many times. The Universal Mother, you know, is not, can't be thought of in anthropomorphic terms, you know, as some sort of an Eve analog to some Adam analog that, you know, we call God the Father, right? I mean, and see, they're kind of reminding you of this. I mean, you really have to kind of go up through kind of an individuality thing and capture the transcendent wholeness of that, and then leverage off of that and really come from the top down to discover the individuality of the whole. by leveraging off the wholeness of the parts as you go up. As you go up with the parts, you find a wholeness of the parts, and then you return, then you get the reciprocal reflection of that as the individuality of the whole, the mother. Right? So that's what they're referring to at the end there.
And this is all part of our universe career.
Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. In other words.
That cleared it all up.
Can we go back to that first word again?
Okay, in other words, you're recognizing there's this big picture of you're evolving, you know, as an ascending being, but that whole big picture is just a macro expression of a micro thing within you that you can do in essence right now. I mean, the fact that the whole universe is this upwelling and downwelling means that because you're a child of God the Mother, you have that twofold expression embodied within you, because you're a child of that parent. Okay? Seek within yourself what they're saying, the truth of what they're saying, you know, as a macroscopic fact. Find the truth of that within you. Find a moving up. Oh, wait a minute. It kind of sounds like moving up the levels of meaning, getting up to the top, and then turning around and approaching your inner life from the top down. Until you do that, so you're working your way up in relationship to the Almighty, and you get to the top, then you can turn around, and now you can begin a new life, synchronizing with the downwelling of the mother. You can begin to have the peace that passes all understanding and all these various things. You can find wisdom, you know, you can find truth, you can, etc. Right? But it's all, you have it with internalized within you, this nature, this twofold nature of the totality of the finite. Right? Okay?
Which is the previous episode. And the phylogeny is both beneath.
No. Phylogeny is talking about the big picture. You know, like in terms of evolution, you have the evolution of species, right, of phyla, right? Phyla. Yeah, that recapitulates ontogeny. I mean, you know, the development of the individual.
Ontological.
Right. Ontogeny. Right. The genesis of your beingness, of you as an individual. Right. I mean, that whole bit that, you know, as you go from single-celled conception, single-celled organism, you know, to roughly age 6, you're just, you know, repeating in essence the whole evolution from the first single-celled animals 450 million years ago to Anna and Infanta, right? You just repeat that whole, the essence of that whole evolutionary process, right? Phylogeny, right? Your ontogeny recapitulates that phylogeny, right? Right. It's a fancy, just old expression, right? Yeah. But your individual development is just a reflection of that big picture evolutionary process. You evolve. Your growth is evolution, right? You growing as an individual is just evolution again. Right. All growth is evolution. All right, so now let's get to this paragraph here. So it starts out. The material, this is the answer to John's desire for bringing this home and making it more personally relevant.
One of John's desires.
The formerly mentioned one that we highlighted, and I told you we'd get to in the third paragraph. The material-minded creatures of the evolutionary worlds of the 7 superuniverses, okay, that's me, I'm one of those, can comprehend deity unity only as it is evolving in this power personality synthesis of the Supreme Being. Wow. What are they referring to there? Okay. They're referring to something that we've long had a name for, something we long ago recognized as what's actually this complexity that they've laid out in the previous two paragraphs here. This whole bit about the Almighty on the one hand, and the mother on the other hand, as being two phases of this whole, this wholeness that's ubiquitous throughout the totality of the finite. When you recognize that there's this quality that sort of underlies subtly all of our experiences, you're beginning to recognize, through insight, the presence of the Almighty, the summation, that there isn't just parts, there's also the summation of the parts that's present there with the parts, between the parts, behind the parts, whatever you want to say. Okay? That presence of the Almighty we call providence. Lowercase p. Lowercase p. It's just this, it-like presence, this functioning. Remember, facets of deity function, the Almighty functions. We experience this functioning where things just kind of coincidentally work together as if there's a whole. Wow, there really isn't, but it's really this magical thing. It's as if there's a whole. We call it providence, this notion you have of providence. Well, providence isn't just a notion, it's a fact. There's a facet of deity that's ubiquitously present. It's called the Almighty.
God-man.
Okay. No, right? Yeah. But then there's more to it than that. You can distinguish between lowercase p providence and capital P providence. What are you referring to if you speak of capital P providence? That's the other ubiquitous presence, right, that strikes you as more personal-like. Instead of just power pattern, strikes you as personal purposive. That's the mother. Lowercase p providence is the Almighty. Capital P providence is the mother. See, material-minded creatures of the evolutionary worlds of the seven superuniverses can comprehend deity unity, right? This deity unity that's present, only as it is evolving in this power personality synthesis of the Supreme Being, right? As I just described, and we call that providence, that presence. Right? And now we know technically what it is. Right? It's not our imagination. It's not our wishful thinking. It's a literal presence of deity. That has an inherent wholeness to it. The fundamental quality of deity is unity. Right? You can only comprehend deity unity as this sense that you get you call providence. Right? They finally get to that, way up in part, towards the end of part three, they talk about providence and its relationship. And you'll notice in the book, sometimes they capitalize providence, sometimes they don't. Right? Yeah. Depends on whether they're referring to the Almighty or the Mother.
And you know what's famous in Providence? John Hay Library.
And if we want to really bring it home to John Hay, yeah.
You see why he asked that question? That would be Providence, Rhode Island.
Yes, that would be Providence, Rhode Island, however, yes.
The next part really is...
Okay, you're right. Now we're going to get to that. Okay, so... Then they get to something that you can reflect on a little bit more, a little less abstractly. Providence is a pretty abstract thing, right? So a little bit more tangible, a little more concrete. You usually say in contrast to abstract, a little more concrete. So on any level of existence, God cannot exceed the conceptual capacity of the beings who live on such a level. Who gives you capacity? The mother, right? And you can take delight in cultivating, having her bestow more capacity upon you, right? Grow you, right? Capacity doesn't come from the father, it comes from the mother. Oh, we were just talking about capital P providence. All right, so there's that. Conceptual capacities, mind, right? Okay, it comes from the mother. You'd like to use more of the mind that she can bestow on you. And she said, well, yeah, it'd be dandy, but I can't put, you know, a gallon of mind into a pint of capacity, right? Mortal man must, so now I guess a little more concrete, mortal man must, through the recognition of truth, the appreciation of beauty, and the worship of goodness, evolve the recognition of a God of love. Okay, so that part, and we've talked about the rest of the paragraph already. So that part, playing off of the truth, beauty, goodness. Again, you know, remind yourself, they're in the order truth, beauty, goodness. Right? You have beauty on one side, goodness on the other side. Truth is the superadditive consequence, it's above. To say truth, beauty, goodness is to approach it from the top down. You hit truth first, then you go down to that which is immediately tied to your individuality, more approachable, more concrete, beauty, and then something a little more abstract, goodness. And that's the order of sort of experiential engagement from the top down, truth, then beauty, then goodness. Okay. And, you know, if you look on the threefold actuality at the unity chart, remember in field number 7, I bring up that threefold actuality. I've got them in just their simple structural order here of beauty, truth, goodness. But I don't just put them like that. I put admiration of beauty, belief in truth, and reverence of goodness. Yeah. Right? You know, they use those expressions in the book. So you start with an initial, mostly subjective relationship to eternity. You've got this relationship to eternity that you've been given by grace, and your encirclement in the Holy Spirit. That's mostly superconscious, though. But you get up to an initial God knowingness, and you can, you know, so you get up to the sixth level of meaning, and you start to approach this from the top down. But mostly, you're kind of dealing with the subjective association with truth, beauty, goodness. So you have belief in truth, right? Your subjective mind having a belief that's in the wholeness of the truth. You have the subjective you know, experience of admiration of beauty, right? And you have reverence of goodness. You know, you have reverence because you have the sixth adjutant. See, so you know we're talking about, we're down there in the lower domain, the feelings on the level of the feelings, the second level of meaning down in the lower domain. You know, other aspects of your subjective experiences in that lower domain. So you have belief in truth, admiration of beauty, reverence of goodness. But you look here, it's not what they have here. They've got something that's taken up a notch. Okay? Going beyond that initial, you know, mostly subjective sort of a phenomenon, I'm getting it more objective. So it's not just belief in truth, where you kind of just have this superconscious relationship to truth, and your belief is fortunately within that context by grace. But you're getting up there in the upper domain, the domain of truth itself. And you're getting a direct recognition of that truth. And especially post-Pentecost, you actually have a fourth insight now that facilitates that direct recognition of truth. The Spirit of Truth, right, is a fourth cosmic insight. Right? So that you have one for things, one for meanings, one for values, but then you've got a fourth one for the recognition of truth directly, instead of having to get at truth as a synthesis of the other three. You got a fourth to get at it directly. So, you know, you've got this catalyzed ability to get this very objective recognition of truth, the wholeness. Right? And not merely the admiration of beauty, see, but the appreciation of beauty. Now, the word appreciation means proper estimation. A proper estimation, a more objective. Okay. And and not the reverence of goodness, right? Which is down on the, reverence is on the second level of meaning. Worship is on the sixth level of meaning. Right? So worship of goodness, a relationship to goodness in that direct synchronization with the cosmos that is worship. That's synchronization with the substrate of the cosmos, the mother, right, if you will. Right? So, see, in that more objective relationship to truth, beauty, and goodness, you can evolve the recognition of a God of love. Right? See, on the threefold actuality of unity chart, you go admiration of beauty, belief in truth, reverence of goodness, and then faith in God who is love. Notice how they're doing that, see? You've got the God of love, just like I do there. But instead of just that initial faith in God who is love, they're talking about a direct recognition of a God of love. It's that whole bit about evolve the recognition. They're thinking about you going from that initial God knowingness to an eventual God consciousness. Very, very transcendent thing to strive for.
So the God consciousness that we're looking for or aspire to is not consciousness of the Universal Father, is it?
I mean,
not directly.
I mean, that's in terms of, you know, God consciousness is personalized deity consciousness. Right, so it's a consciousness of all personalized deity, you know, in the most general sense, okay? But, you know, what the spear point of God in terms of, you know, relative to our experiences is God the Father, right? I mean, he's the point, you know, of immediate personal engagement. You know, he initiates that. You know, so in that sense, you know, a God the Father consciousness is an initiation of God consciousness that will be followed by, you know, ever greater God consciousness beyond God the Father.
Okay. And your thought adjuster is helping you do this.
Right. I mean, the thought adjuster is indispensable part of that process of going from God knowingness to God consciousness. You don't need an adjuster to have God knowingness, but you can't get to God consciousness without an adjuster. Right, and there's a whole physics to all that we you know, unpack in Reawakening Philosophy too. I mean, it's a very complicated thing to go from God knowingness to God consciousness. But, was there a question over here?
The insertion of the word evolve.
Yeah.
Recognition of God. This is not something you just all of a sudden recognize.
See, again, you don't choose God consciousness.
You choose
God knowingness. But you have to be grown by God the Mother into God consciousness. It evolves in you.
It's a little item. That
can't be chosen by fiat.
Right.
Right? But that faith grasp of God knowingness, okay, that's you choose. Right? You get up to the sixth level of meaning, you know, genuine religious consciousness, right? And you make that faith grasp, you take a hold of that. Initial tenuous connection to God, and there's a God knowingness. But, you know, like I said, it's mostly it's the superconscious fact, right? The actual God knowingness. You know, in terms of what's conscious, you know, you've got some notion of God, some idea of God that's predicated on evolutionary, you know, traditions and whatnot, and you know, and you intellectually believe in that idea of God and all that, you know. But you know, so the genuineness of it is mostly superconsciousness, right? But God consciousness, okay, that's where it's God consciousness, right? Not God superconsciousness. It's God consciousness, right? And it's you know, it's a very advanced state, you know, that's predicated on a being grown up through many, many philosophic levels of wisdom by the Mother, right, to get to that high, high state of capacity. See, the conceptual capacity. Right? You know, you're not you're not, as a child of God, you don't have the conceptual capacity. That's got to be grown into you. Only an adult of God, you know, has the conceptual capacity for God consciousness.
Jesus was not an exceptionally brilliant person.
No, he was just a man of his time and day. He had the genetics with all of its defects from his mom and dad, and you know, yada yada. All of the limited nurturing that happened in Palestine 2,000 years ago. Right.
But he was grown.
Right, but he supplied the favorable conditions to be grown.
Right. Yeah. He wasn't, you know, he may not have been intelligent by current day standards, but he was certainly wise.
Certainly,
it's
a good intuition.
Maybe not the most brilliant person in the world, but certainly one of the wisest to, you know, go out there and spread the beauty that he saw.
Yeah, and again, just remember, it's not an adult that points out that the emperor doesn't have any clothes on. It's a child, right? A little bit of objective recognition goes a long way. It can make up for an awful lot of just raw intellect that can do dot to dots, you know, and create rationalization schemes. Right? So, I mean, that's, you know, fundamentally why Jesus, the relatively lowly man, you know, was not fundamentally limited by that genetic lowliness. I mean, obviously, you know, Gabriel made sure that it wasn't too limited of genetics. He had to make sure that, you know, the potential was there. But again, you know, you definitely don't want to be limited by your ignorance. And it starts with not limiting yourself to the ignorance of others. Right, I mean, just courageously recognize how ignorant the experts are out there. Right, don't bond yourself to what you hear, you know, from some talking head in the news. Like, oh, well, he said it, so it must be real. You know, I got to act upon that reality. Yeah. No.
See, he just said it, so assume the position.
You know, you got to be able to recognize, no, that you're 10 times smarter than me, but you have no clothes on. That's not a reality. That's your preconceived opinion, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. And I know that because I've found some objectivity. Right? I don't limit myself to the clever little set of facts that you've connived together for me to test me if I'm sophistry proof or not. Okay. There's some really smart people out there that can spin a very enticing little tale, and it'll sound really real to you if you're not sophistry proof. Yeah, and you'll do very unfortunate things very zealously predicated on that quote unquote reality. Right? You'll be certain of things that are not true.
And you'll go public.
Yes, you'll go public. And you. Okay. All right. So you can see that. It's that paragraph that is trying to get you to take that abstraction in the first two paragraphs. And if you reflect on it, notice it doesn't spoon feed it to you. I mean, you got to really reflect on that third paragraph. Yeah. To see that it's actually speaking to this, well, give me something more concrete here. What, you know, something that I can approach more consciously in my life, instead of abstractions like, you know, the supreme spirit and the central universe and whatnot, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Little help here.
Okay.
How does that relate?
Okay. You know, and again, like I said, I mean, you can actually go, oh, wait a minute, they're talking about providence there. I mean, that's not until you get all the way up, you know, to paper 118, and you kind of put it all together. It's like, oh, that reminds me of that paragraph way back there in, you know, paper 56. Okay.
While ascending mortals achieve power, comprehension of the Almighty on the capitals of the super universes, and personality comprehension of the Supreme on the outer circuits of Havona, they do not actually find the Supreme Being as they are destined to find the Paradise Deities. Even the Finaliters, sixth stage spirits, have not found the Supreme Being, nor are they likely to until they have achieved seventh stage spirit status, and until the Supreme has become actually functional in the activities of the future outer universes.
Notice that, you know, you've got the basic picture we talk about a lot, and I'll remind you of that in a second. But you notice the qualifiers. Again, you know, what I'm about to say, as if it was undeniable fact, is actually, it's like, well, the only thing that seems logical is, and the revelators are thinking the same thing, but of course they always know that, who knows, maybe as you get closer to the grand universe being settled in light and life, some completely unimaginable things might come into play, where maybe you get some sort of more tangible foreshadowing of a, hello, Mr. Supreme Being, standing right there on that X, let me shake your hand. Right. But right now, right, there's no X anywhere in the seven super universes or in the central universe or on the Isle of Paradise. There is no X that the Supreme Being is standing on because it's an absentite being. Right? So you're not going to find him in a finite experience. You have to actually be able to, you know, have transcendent experiences to find him on some X somewhere. Okay? Even when you're a six-stage spirit, even when you're a finaliter, right? And you have all of, you know, you had your first personal experience with the Universal Father even, and yet, see, it's a reminder, right? Yeah. All of that is in the finiteness of the sevenfold, that experience with the Father, right? We're talking about the absentite fact of the Supreme Being. That's transcendent. The basic idea, though, is, you know, what appears to be what's going to happen is I ascend to perfection. I'm inducted into the core of the finality. I become a six-stage spirit, and I penetrate, you know, horizontally to completion. I encompass the fullness of the finite. I'm complete relative to the finite, and then the Supreme Being reaches down, if you will, and bestows a spirit fragment upon me. On each of us, as an individual, gives us an upgrade, makes us a seven-stage spirit, right? Pulls you up out of the finite, up to eye level with him in the absentite, as a seven-stage spirit, and you can't magically, you know, make something that's finite transcend. Right, you know, any more than you can take more fancier and fancier mindal selves, and then suddenly they just magically become a personalized self. No, I mean, to go from a fancy mindal self to a personalized self, a personality has, from the top down, has to be bestowed upon it, right? And it's literally notched up discontinuously. Same thing here.
What did you call that?
The Supreme Spirit is going to bestow another spirit fragment upon you.
Okay, is that will be as a potential, give you a potentiality, not an actuality, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, in many ways, right? But, you know, basically, he's going to give you an absentite body. He's going to give you a spirit fragment that makes you an absentite being.
Okay.
Right?
As well as.
Well, and then the finiteness, see, will then all be bottled up inside of you.
Right.
You know, it's there, but it no longer manifests outward, your finite nature, because there's no finite external world for it to manifest into. It's an absentite external world. Right? See, so it's inherently bottled up because there's no way it can manifest outward. There is no finite outer, you know, external world for it to manifest into. You've transcended all that.
For a while.
This is a long way down the road. Yeah. But just remember, you know.
You still got to go through all the seven super universes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now approaching our
10 minutes to the round. Just remember that you know, you can always think about the why of that. It's like, well, why is my finite nature bottled up? You know, ask yourself a question like that. See if you can answer it. Well, I mean, it can't be just 'cause. I mean, literally, why don't I manifest my finite nature anymore? It's actually pretty straightforward. There is no finite external world for it to manifest into. Right? Any more than you can't experience the existential nature of your thought adjuster. It's like, well, why not? Because there is no existential external world for it to manifest into. You're not in eternity. So, I mean, there's always a why to these things. It's not just some random 'cause that someone has arbitrarily imposed. I mean, it's, there's some logical, you know, reason for all these things that you can
call it cosmos.
That you can, yeah, we don't live in a cosmos. Yes, we live in a cosmos. You know, the universe is wholly logical. Okay, so they're just invoking that. And see, so, you know, but remember the precursor to that. See, while ascending mortals achieve power comprehension of the Almighty. See, they're referring to the facet of deity, the Almighty. Okay, and again, you get that you know synchronization with the Supreme Spirit in the central universe, like they're saying there, etc. Right, but you know, you're not going to experience the integration of all that, you know, until you're on an absonite plane, if you will, right, where such experiences are possible. Right, there has to be an absonite outer life for you to have absolute experiences, right? Okay, that's all they're getting at. It's just that integration of, you know, in simple terms, of the it and the she into a he, into an absolute he. Okay, then the final little statement here.
But when ascenders find the Universal Father as the seventh level of God the Sevenfold, they have attained the personality of the first person of all deity levels of personal relationship with universe creatures.
Okay, we've already basically said, but just, you know, just one little last thing to picture it. You know, if you look at the psychic circles and the sevenfold, they're just trying to get you to think about that. But when ascenders find the Universal Father as, see, not, you know, as an infinite person, but as the seventh level of God the Sevenfold. So, right here, the Universal Father in the sevenfold, right? When you find that on the third circle of Avona, right? You've worked your way all up to sevenfold, and on this third circle of Avona, you get to the top, right? And you find the Universal Father in the sevenfold. You know, they're just getting you to think about, turn around and look back down. What have you achieved? They have attained the personality of the first person of all deity levels of personal relationships with universe creatures, lowercase d deity. Okay? Just, you know, you have all of this going upward in the sevenfold, and you've gotten to the top, which if you think about it from the top down, that's the first person, and all those things are downstepped expressions of that first person. And you turn around and look at it from the top down. Right? You worked your way up, and turn around and see it anew.
I totally misunderstood that.
Yep.
Well, I just assume I read that as the Universal Father of the Sevenfold is the personal recognition that you achieve there is the same person of all, of not just the sevenfold, but of all the whole universe. Well, maybe I don't understand. I'm confused.
Right. They're just trying to remind you, right, you know, what it means to say first person or first source and center. You know, it's just first, not also last and everything in between. Right? You haven't found God the infinite. There is no such fact. Right? You know, in a simple sense of you've got that first person that doled out the personality to all those other persons. Like we at the beginning, you're wondering where does the personality of the ancients of days come from? Right? Mm-hmm. You know, you got the universal father, you get these super fathers brought into existence, and they're personalized from the first person. Okay,
that you recognize at that point.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you finally work your way all the way back up the bestowing chain and get to the origin point and turn around and look at it anew from the top down. Yeah. Right. So, see, and notice how that last little bit is they're saying, well, all that, you know, again, trying to leverage you off the father to get you to think about the mother. Right? See, that was a simple thing in the sevenfold, to just picture getting up to the father and turning around and thinking about how you got the second person subsequent to the first person and the third person subsequent to that, you know, et cetera, the supreme father below that, it's all the way down. And they're saying, now, think about the essence of that. That existential fact gets reflected. And you can work your way up the Almighty and turn around and find the mother from the top down. See, again, they keep, like I told you, they just keep doing this. They're trying to get you to just leverage off what you know about the seven absolutes infinity, the individualities of the sevenfold, trying to get you to play off of that and recognize something a little bit deeper, a little more abstract. But when all is said and done, oh, so much more consequential. The God-knowingness of God the Father doesn't give you the peace that passes all understanding. Mm-hmm. And people have been imagining that it does for 2,000 years. You know, and yet we still languish, right, in darkness, right, in confusion. Right? And it's because, you know, that's just the potential. For the Father, your relationship, that initial relationship with the Father is the potential for the peace that passes all understanding, not the actuality of the peace that passes all understanding. You know, and everything will begin to change if we just stop believing that it is. As long as you believe that it is the actuality of the peace that passes all understanding, there is none so blind as those who will not see. You are literally short-circuiting the favorable conditions for ever being grown into an adult of God. You're willing yourself to remain ever a child in that initial state. And God, no matter what God you're talking about, cannot grow you. You have absolute free will. If you say, you will not grow me, I have reached the end from the beginning. My initial tadpole recognition of God is the infinite final recognition of God. Period, end of story. You're not going to tell me otherwise. Right? Then guess what? You get your wish. You'll remain forever a child, which means eventually you'll decay, because if you're not growing, you're decaying, and eventually you will just disappear. Right? There are no children of God in eternity. There's only adults of God in eternity. Oh, wow. Children of God are in time. And eventually you've got to transcend time and get to eternity as an adult of God. You've got to allow yourself to be grown. You've got to stop believing. You know, these false illusions of success, right, that's one of them. Right? Have the courage to face the fact that you're a little child and you don't have peace that passes all understanding. And you need to supply the favorable conditions to eventually be grown to that. Just like Jesus did. The faith of Jesus, section 1 in the last paper, follows a very, very, very long preface in that section. The truth of getting to that is a long evolutionary process. That's why that preface is so long. It is a long gradually of growth that finally gets you to Jesus the man instead of Jesus the child.
Yeah? The very last part of the last paper.
That very last paper, paper 196.
First right?
Starts with a
first section of it.
Unbelievably long preface, section 0, right, of that paper. Right? That's why it's constructed that way. To remind you that you don't get to Jesus the man like Paul. You get to Jesus, the man like Jesus. There's no suddenly. There's a long, long, gradually of supplying the favorable conditions to be grown gradually by the mother into an adult of God. Right? You can't just fiat yourself into an adult of God. All right. We've gone way over again. So let's, all right, let's just wrap it up there. Let's take a moment here, everyone.